It was only later, when the mess cleared and the staff sergeants and the captain got down to planning how best to secure the gardens, that Avery realized why the recruits had been so upbeat. The presentation proved the aliens could be killed, showed that Harvest might be kept safe with a few well-placed bullets. And if the recruits had confidence in any of their training, they knew they could at least aim a rifle and shoot. Unfortunately, some recruits were less confident than others, and as Osmo now broke out in a nervous shudder, Avery put a hand on the recruit's shoulder and steered him toward the trees.
We need to make a good impression, understood?
Yes, Staff Sergeant. Avery slapped Osmo on the backside, accelerating his retreat.
All right then, go on.
As the disappointed recruit jogged north, Jenkins' voice crackled in Avery's earpiece.
Forsell's got contacts on thermal, 10 o'clock high.
Avery scanned the western sky, but he couldn't see anything with naked eyes.
How many?
Two,
Jenkins replied.
Want us to mark them?
On Avery's orders, 1st Platoon's marksmen had taken up position in an ornate greenhouse on the garden's eastern edge, a white curvilinear building that would have been right at home in a 19th century European park. Granted, what would have been a cast iron frame was now a titanium lattice, and thousands of panes of glass, shatterproof plastic. But straddling the garden's uppermost tier, the greenhouse looked just as stately as those that inspired it.
Negative, Avery replied. They'll be here soon enough.
The marksmen were hunkered on a balcony that ran around the greenhouse's central elliptical dome and continued out along the roofs of its two wings, giving them an excellent view of the gardens and the sky above. Forsell's spotting scope was equipped with a targeting laser that could paint the two contacts and generate range-finding data. But again, Lieutenant Commander Alcigny had been very clear. As much as possible, the Marines and their recruits should minimize behavior the aliens might regard as hostile. Tugging at his own rifle's sling, Avery again wondered how much he and the aliens had in common, if they would show similar restraint.
Company's on the way, Captain,
Avery growled into his throat mic.
How's our perimeter?
Charlie's squads report all clear, Ponder replied. 1C and 2C were deployed at the garden's main gate and its exit from the Utgard Highway, respectively. The Marines didn't expect any traffic. It was a Tuesday, and the gardens were mainly a weekend destination. But all it would take was a single sedan of early rising plant lovers to ruin the meeting secrecy, or worse, spread premature panic.
And our welcome party?
The captain asked. Avery scanned the remaining 1A recruits.
Good to go, sir.
Keep them calm, Johnson. Weapons safed and shouldered.
Roger that.
For a few long seconds, there was no chatter on the comm as all gathered in the gardens took a deep breath. Avery listened to the Mimir rush toward its plummet. The noise of the falls muted all but the most enthusiastic birds, just now beginning their morning calls deep inside the magnolias. Like the greenhouse's exotic flora, the birds were imports, starlings and other hardy species brought to Harvest to help contain the planet's essential insect population. Slowly, the birds' cries were overwhelmed by a pulsing whine that grew in intensity until it bested even the Mimir's mighty roar. Avery squinted at the sky from beneath the brim of his duty cap. In the brightening, deep blue haze, he saw two dark shadows following one behind the other, like sharks prowling the shallows of a storm-churned sea.
Staff Sergeant, Jenkins began.
I see them,
Avery squared his cap on his forehead.
Squad, stand to.
As 1A came to attention, a pair of alien ships emerged from the haze. Purple hull plate flashing, they dropped toward the Bifrost and then began a wide circle around the gardens. The ship's bifurcated designs made Avery think of two hauler trailers linked to a common cab, but traveling in reverse. Unlike most human aircraft, the dropship's cabins were located in the ship's sterns. Avery could see a single obvious weapon on each ship, a ball turret with a single barrel suspended beneath the cabin. The ships had no engines or thrusters, but as the dropships completed their first circle and one of them decelerated above the promontory, Avery noticed the ship's outline ripple and guessed they must rely on some sort of anti-gravity field for lift and propulsion.
Step back, Avery shouted as the ship dove toward the lawn. She's going to need more room.
The recruits backpedaled with more speed than decorum, and the dropship glided to a stop directly above the lighted X. The bulbs flickered and died, and the grass flattened under the press of the invisible field. Skin tingling, Avery watched as water condensed against the field, defining its ovoid shape, only to fall in a single sheet of rain as the field collapsed. The ship's curvaceous cabin settled onto the turf, but its two compartments remained hovering, parallel to the ground.
"Form up,"
Avery growled, and the 1A recruits moved back into position, two lines on either side of the dropship. Presently, one of the compartments swung open along its bottom edge. The interior of the ship was dim, and it took Avery a moment to distinguish the three aliens from their surroundings. Partly, this was because the creature's armor shone with the same dull glow as the metal bands that held them secure and upright, but also because these aliens were nothing like the ones Avery had fought aboard the freighter. The latter reminded Avery of upright reptiles. The ones now shaking free of their harnesses looked like the improbable offspring of a gorilla and a grizzly bear, hirsute giants with shoulders as wide as an average human was tall and fists that could easily encompass Avery's head.
"Sir?"
Despite the moisture in the air, Avery felt his mouth go dry.
"This isn't what we expected."
"Explain," Ponder replied.
"They're bigger. Armored."
"Weapons?"